franchise interviews. From Easton, Pennsylvania to Sydney, Australia, you're listening to Franchise Interviews. Franchise Interviews. Welcome to Franchise Interviews, an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship. Listen to interviews with franchisers, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts, and attorneys. And now, welcome your host, Marty McDermott, and Franchise Interviews.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of Franchise Interviews, where for over 17 years now, we've been asking the Franchipreneurs a one-on-one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott. I'm the president of Franchise Interviews, and we have a great show. We're meeting with Bennett Maxwell, the chairman of Dirty Dough. And Dirty Dough uses centralized production with special machines to produce the world's first three-layer cookie. This also allows for a franchise to open up at half the cost of the competition, half the labor, while lowering ongoing costs. I'm going to talk to Bennett about that in just a moment on Franchise Interviews. So stick around because we have a great show.
Franchise Teacher.
Would you like to know how to franchise your concept or grow your franchise business?
Meet the experts at Franchise Teacher.
The goal of Franchise Teacher is to teach, coach, consult, and advise. The team of experts at Franchise Teacher will evaluate your business model and present you with a winning business strategy.
Franchise Teacher will help you decide whether or not your concept works and if it's franchisable. Franchise Teacher is proud to have over 30 years of experience in franchising as both franchisees and franchisors.
Franchise Teacher are developers of over a dozen franchise systems, which include brick and mortar as well as home-based concepts of nearly 3,000 combined franchise locations.
Whether you need to add more units or get more customers, Franchise Teacher can help. We will teach.
Franchise Teacher will help you learn our proven system.
Coach.
Franchise Teacher will help you provide a game plan to succeed.
Consult.
Franchise Teacher will make sure you stay on track.
And advise.
Franchise Teacher will help you learn from our over 30 years of experience in franchising as both franchisees and franchisors. Take advantage of our free, no-obligation phone consultation. Simply go to franchiseteacher.com or call us at 561-385-3032.
That's franchiseteacher.com or call us at 561-385-3032.
Hi, this is Connie McDermott, Administrative Assistant for Franchise Interviews, LLC, and you're listening to Franchise Interviews.
Franchise Interviews. From Easton, Pennsylvania to Sydney, Australia, you're listening to Franchise Interviews. Franchise Interviews.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to a very special edition of Franchise Interviews, where for over 17 years now, we've been asking the Franchipreneurs a one-on-one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott. I'm the president of Franchise Interviews, and as we were saying earlier, we have a great show today. We're meeting with Bennett Maxwell, the chairman of Dirty Dough. And Dirty Dough uses a centralized production with special machines to produce the world's first three-layer cookie. And this also allows for a franchise to open up at half the cost of the competition, half the labor, while lowering ongoing costs. Hi, Bennett. How are you? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing super good. Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Me too. It's a pleasure to have you on the show, Bennett. I've been following you for some time now. I always like to ask our guests, where are you calling from today, Bennett?
Salt Lake.
Oh, nice. Okay. And that's where I think, because again, I've been researching your background. I think you grew up in that area, didn't you?
Yeah, grew up here. Lived a handful of years in Southern California. Dirty Dough started in Arizona, but now we've moved the headquarters here to kind of all.
Okay, that's fantastic. That's great. And, you know, it's an amazing story. I always say, Bennett, you know, like I always describe an entrepreneur as someone who's able to identify an opportunity. I thought, you know, maybe because, I mean, you've done so much in your life in terms of entrepreneurship, but if we can go back to that time where you kind of recognized Dirty Dough, you came familiar with the concept. Can you talk about that time?
Yeah, so right before I was aware of that, in Utah there's a cookie company called Chip, doing these large gourmet cookies, and then another company called Baked, and then Crumble came along doing the exact same concept. So I kind of was here when it was developing, and early on when Crumble started selling franchises, they called me in for an interview because my background sells.
Right.
Interviewed me to sell franchises and wasn't interested in that opportunity, but you know how it goes when you're first franchising. You want to sell everybody a franchise. So then they started pitching me a franchise, and I was interested for about 5 minutes until they told me, well, you have to move out of state because we've sold out, because we require you to be in the store 60, 80 hours. And that's kind of when I saw the opportunity. I'm like, this is a really cool concept, but how many people won't buy a franchise because they don't want to be a full-time baker? You know?
Right.
So when I got wind of Dirty Dough, and it was just a Facebook post saying, I'm looking for an investor to open up a first storefront. That's when I kind of saw the opportunity. I'm like, oh, I can invest if we could do it a little bit differently, simplify it. So I ended up investing in 2019, and then I purchasing the company in 2021.
That's fantastic. I think it's a great story, Ben. And you did change it around, didn't you? Again, you recognized Dirty Dough as the opportunity, but it sounds like you made a lot of changes once you came in, didn't you?
Yeah, when I purchased the company, that first year, 2021, was revamping everything. And I'd already, kind of been pitching, what if I franchise this concept and we did it this way, and kind of getting that feedback. And everybody's, the number one concern was, is this a fad? Is this cupcakes? Is this frozen yogurt? So
yeah,
I wanted to make sure that I was kind of hedging the bet, following Dirty Dough after other companies that have been around for several decades. And there's Mrs. Fields and Great American Cookie Company, both started in 1977, done hundreds of stores. So, like, what have they done to last almost five decades? Well, they do centralized production. So that's kind of, I'm like, I want to model the back-end production, low labor, low cost, Mrs. Fields, Great American Cookie Company, but I want to compete in this new emerging market, which is the large multi-flavored gourmet cookie space. So it just came down to finding a machine to mass produce that. So when I purchased it, it was very similar to the Crumble model. Everything was made at each store. First year, we centralized the production, and now we ship out pre-portioned, three-layer stuff, cookie pucks, and it's all formulated to cook at the same time, temperature and fan speed. All the ovens are programmed, so you can walk into any Dirty Dough, grab whatever cookies you want, put them on the pan, mix and match, put it in the oven, press start. So everything other than the name has been redone, recipes, processes, logos, everything.
That's great. It's interesting how many people think, I don't know where it came from, but, because I've been doing this show such a long time now, Bennett, and people will ask me, about the whole cookie industry, I guess because of, some of it's attributed to Crumble, and how many people say it's a fad, but because I've had some of those other cookie companies that you've mentioned on the show. I remember one gentleman, I think it was Great American Cookie. I think he was he's been doing it for 30 years, and that's not a fad, is it? I mean, this is something you can do for a really long time, and I don't know if you're allowed to talk about it. I would imagine you could say something about it, but maybe you could talk about, because I was really impressed with how you handled yourself with, I guess you could say the lawsuit or getting sued. Are you allowed to talk a little bit about that?
Oh yeah, it's out there. I talk about it. Okay. Any and everything. So yes.
Like the videos to me were intriguing because I saw the videos and I love them and I've shared them with my students and people. Who came up with that idea? Because I just thought it was so brilliant. I said, oh my God, this is the way to handle yourself. How did that whole thing come about?
Yeah. So it was actually before we even opened our first franchise. So we had one corporate store and that was it. And then we had this, this lawsuit came about right before the lawsuit, literally the month before, because we're both based out of Utah. And there's just one freeway pretty much in Utah, I-15. And, Crumble's been here for 5 years or so, never put up a billboard. We put up some billboards that said Dirty Dough coming soon. And then the next month, Crumble put up 1,000 billboards. And then the lawsuit happened. And I thought it would be funny to respond with the billboards. So the billboards are kind of the first thing. And we put up billboards saying, our cookies don't crumble with competition and so good we're being sued. kind of
smart.
Fun, cheeky.
Yes.
And it's not like we really spent – these were like digitally rotating billboards that you barely even saw. But because we posted on social media, that's where a lot of the traction came. And because of that traction, this video producer reached out. If you've ever heard of the product Squatty Potty, they did a viral video of like a unicorn pooping rainbow ice cream. I don't know. They've done a lot of good videos.
Right.
It was that same producer reached out, and he kind of pitched me on a few ideas. because he, you know, he saw that game to to be fun with it. So we settled on a handful of ideas, and then my only criteria is these videos have to address the lawsuit directly, like head on.
Right.
I'm not just wanting to make fun of it. I want to actually like educate the public about how silly this was. So it was kind of a process on developing which ideas, but I was all about that, and you know, a lot of people around me were very hesitant, and I'm like, let's go for it, guys. We're already getting sued. Can it get worse?
Well, I got to say, I mean, I thought it was brilliant on your part, you know, to go forward with that. I just thought it was very clever, you know, I think because a lot of people, again, saw it on social media. And as you use the word, I mean, I think the whole thing was silly, you know, on Crumble's part, of course, you know what I mean? It was just, it was borderline ridiculous, you know? So, I'm glad you were able to talk about it. If you were at a franchise show, I know when you're typically describing dirty dough to like a consumer, you know, you'll typically say, okay, we're, you know, gourmet cookies. But if you were at a franchise show and someone came up to your booth and they were trying some of the cookies and they said, oh, you know, tell me about dirty dough. I mean, how do you typically describe the concept? We mentioned a little bit in the intro today.
Yeah, gourmet cookie franchise that specializes in multi-layered and stuffed cookies. And we're branching out. We've been adding a few products. Still all dessert themed, you know, what we've been selling ourselves as to our franchisees is a, you know, low cost, very simplistic model. So we want to abide by that. But yeah, a gourmet cookie franchise that specializes in stuffed cookies.
Do you get to sample? You know, because I know you've had like, oh my god, probably up to 100 flavors up to this point, Ben. I mean, but do you get to sample them before they get to hit the marketplace?
Yeah, yes and no. It's every Wednesday, so when I make it into the office on Wednesday, yes, but it's definitely not a requirement for me to taste them, for them to go out. I like
everything.
I'm just like, yep, that tastes good and that tastes good. You don't ask me. Ask somebody with a more refined palate.
Yeah. And this is what's interesting about you too, like in setting your background is, you know, because I've read a lot of interviews with you, you know, and you're very good at assessing, you know, your strengths and weaknesses. And I know, was it your CEO? Is it Summer Hayes? Is that?
Yeah.
Because I know she's heard some of those concepts have actually been on the show over the years too, you know, and then I think you recognized, you know, her talent, and she's been in franchising a long time, hasn't she?
Yeah, she started Maui Wowie in 83.
Yeah, right. So,
she's 10 years before I was born.
So incredible. I mean,
way more than me.
Right. I mean, She's been doing it. I mean, she's been doing it forever, you know. So, I think that was another brilliant move on your part is bringing someone like her in. Things that really stood out to me is I like the whole concept of the mobile franchise. You know, maybe you could talk a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, stepping back a little, one more step to make, kind of put all the pieces together. When I jumped into Dirty Dough, I really wanted to do it different. Before I ran a solar company in it, and it went well. Yeah. It's a good exit, but I didn't really attach a deeper meaning or purpose. So, did some soul searching, figured that out, and I landed on finding joy and fulfillment despite life's dirtiness. So don't wait for life to be perfect in order to find the joy and fulfillment. And then, how am I going to achieve that? One pillar is mental health and all the messaging inside Dirty Dough that, you know, these cookies are multi-layered, just like life, you know, can often be messy and dirty on the outside, but the sweetness is on the inside. So that's kind of the first pillar. And the second pillar was something that's given me a lot of joy and fulfillment, which is entrepreneurship. So how do you lower the barrier of entry to entrepreneurship to allow more people to take that kind of leap of faith? And let's develop a low cost, you know, if you don't have to buy mixers and you all you do is putting cookies in the oven, it's a lot more simple. You don't have to be an expert baker. Now let's take that again and say, well, now if it's just a mobile concept, it cuts the price in half again.
Correct.
And so, you know, a lot of it was Jill coming in and saying, oh, this is a perfect model because all of the cookie pucks are pre-produced. We can throw two ovens in a trailer. The smell, you know, works great. But the other thing was, again, trying to lower that barrier of entry and achieving the mission statement of, you know, helping others find joy and fulfillment through entrepreneurship.
Right.
So kind of a mixture of those two. And right now we have 15 trailers, food trucks, trailers in operation and, you know, another handful or so being built.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And it's amazing because, you know, one of the things I didn't know, because I don't know a lot about your industry or your business, but you know, it doesn't take a lot of people to run a Dirty Dough, does it? I mean, even during, you know, tough times, you know, I mean, you could really have, I don't know if I could use the word skeleton crew, but it's just a handful of people
yeah.
can run one, couldn't they?
Yeah. I mean, it's typically 10 to 20 people on payroll with 1 to 3 mm-hmm. people working at a time.
Wow. That's really incredible. I imagine, technology is a part of your business, you know, or I don't know if it's a big part of your business. I mean, social media is certainly a part of your business. Maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, how you use technology, whether it's social media or anything else, Bennett.
The data and knowing the customers, like you kind of asked at the beginning,
yeah.
that I've redone a lot of things. Well, the color of Dirty Dough was like a bright orange Little Caesars color because mm-hmm. it was developed on Arizona State University campus out of a dorm room, like because it was college
right.
kids, and that was attracted college kids. Well, when we actually opened up the first storefront and then analyzed who was buying our cookies, it wasn't mm-hmm. a college kid. It was moms. So
wow.
do moms relate to that bright orange color?
Right.
I don't know. Let's ask them. You know, so we did surveys,
right.
and that's when
right.
we rebranded, redid the logo. So a lot of, you know, pulling that customer data and realizing who the customer is and then doing your surveys, that is very important. When you're doing rotational cookies, always measuring, you know, what are the products and what promotions? So I think a lot of it does come back to that,
right.
you know, the data piece. And then providing
analytics.
Good tools for franchisees to be able to operate the store. Again, we're going for simplicity. So do we have a simple inventory tool so they know how to do inventory, you know, and creating admin portals. Like one of the things on the tech that we did right from the get-go is we customized an admin portal that if somebody buys a franchise, you can log in there and it's 107 steps broken down, everything from signing the franchise agreement to the grand
right.
opening and everything you need to do in
wow.
between. And it's all stored in one space. And then on the marketing and social media, that's definitely how we've grown. A lot of it has been my personal social media, my personal branding. That's where most of our franchise sales have come from.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to the exposure from our reaction to the lawsuit, that's, you know,
yeah.
we sold several hundred franchises due to social media, and that's unpaid
right.
ads. That's just getting out
yeah.
there and, you know, trying to post daily.
Right. I think that's fantastic. And I guess it's safe to say, I mean, your industry, I mean, it's a pretty big industry. I don't know how big the industry actually is, but I guess it's safe to say it's a big industry, isn't it?
Yeah, $5.8 billion last year.
Is it really?
In,
wow.
In the cookie market. Yeah.
That's incredible.
It's pretty,
okay,
yeah.
I didn't even realize
there's a lot
that
of people
big.
Eating cookies. And that's cookies,
yeah.
you know, it's because you could go into any gas station or any convenience
right.
store, Walmart, Target, like, you know, cookies are just most people eat a cookie a month, you know?
Yeah. Let me ask you, this interesting question we like to ask our guest, Bennett, is what's been one of the most interesting things that's happened to you since launching Dirty Dough? I mean, I know you have hundreds of stories. I'm sure that, you know, the lawsuit was probably one of them. But, I mean, does anything stand out over the years where you kind of say to yourself, wow? I'm sure you have
I
a lot of them, but so narrow it down to
yeah,
one
yeah,
is tough.
I was going to say, I could more quickly tell you what hasn't surprised me because this is brand
yeah.
new. Like, I haven't been in food or franchising.
Right.
I mean, the big wow was my goal when I bought the company was to open up 30 stores
mm-hmm.
5 years after franchising. I mean, it's
okay.
been 2 years and you have 70 stores open. So that's been
incredible.
The biggest wow, just how fast
yeah.
we've grown. And then all the good that comes with that, the franchise season, the excitement and the economy, the scale, and then all the bad that comes from it because it's like you're learning as you go.
Right.
So definitely pros and cons to that growth, but that has been the biggest surprise of like, wow, within 2 years,
right.
Like we became a somewhat of a national brand, which is just,
yeah.
I didn't think that was even possible for us.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it really is incredible. I mean, here I am, I'm in Eastern Pennsylvania, you know, and I've been very familiar with your brand, you know, and I'm pretty far away from, you know, where the company actually began, you know? So, I mean, I think it's really amazing. Maybe we could talk a little bit about franchisees, you know, cause I've read in the past, you know, that you have certain characteristics or traits that you think would make a successful Dirty Dough franchisee. What do you look for and what's important to you?
Yeah. And one that's still being kind of developed, right? As
okay.
we open up more franchises, I'm like, okay,
right.
this is changing and that's changing.
Sure.
The easiest franchisees and the ones that, you know, appreciate the model the best are the ones that have worked in food in the past. You know,
mm-hmm.
if
right.
you had a, a Subway or a hamburger joint or pizza, and you're dealing with all these fresh ingredients that go bad and the high turnover in it. That's ideal. You know the food industry, obviously, you know business.
Right.
They're the ones that appreciate the model the most. So somebody that already owns another food franchising business is the best. Second to that is just somebody that's going to hustle and be involved in the local community, sponsor the baseball teams, do fundraisings with the schools.
Right.
Because if you just wait for people to show up at your door versus the people that are doing B2B and catering and actually actively involved and passionate about the business, it just makes such a big difference. So experience with food and franchising in the past, and then the second one would just be that I'm going to do whatever it takes.
Right. I think it's an interesting response about it because there's a lot. I notice that there's a lot of franchisees today that want to build on their portfolio. Maybe they don't want to get another Subway franchise and they want to get another type of franchise. You know, so I see a lot of that going on today. But it's interesting with you because, you know, that would also be someone that has experience with franchising, because not everyone is fit to be a franchisee, are they? You know, I mean, that's I always say that's like sometimes like a special type of person is somebody who could follow the system to T, you know? And I think that's very clever on your part because you already know that they understand franchising, and that doesn't always happen in franchising, does it?
Yeah, and it tilts a lot. Right? When I was saying, you know, we're still kind of always reevaluating. We partnered with a restaurant management group called Craveworthy and brought on the former CEO of Jimmy John's as our CEO, and Jill stepped to president, and that was just the beginning of this year. So then he came and kind of raised the qualifications again, and then he also has the credibility when he's vetting franchisees. You know, hey, I was the CEO of Jimmy John's. I own another 10 brands, so that has definitely helped. But I'm sure as we keep evolving, because we're still such a new brand, I'm sure those qualifications, you know, will be tweaked here and there.
The model, again, as I was studying it and researching it, I mean, it seems so simple. So I'm curious, like with training, like how does training work, Bennett? I mean, is there some online? Do they come out to corporate headquarters? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, there's a few days of online training, and I've been speaking with some of the changes that we've gone. It was fly out to Utah, and it was a 3 or 4 day training. Which is plenty if all you're doing is baking the cookies. But what we realized and what, you know, our new CEO, he's like, no, the first thing he did is change it to 2 weeks. So from 3-4 days to 2 weeks. And he said it's not about just teaching them how to bake a cookie. They need to understand a P&L, and they need to understand inventory, they need to understand hiring and HR practice. So he really upped that training. So the process is still simple. However, we still keep a 2-week training here going forward, because we really want to make sure that we're educating them on general business knowledge in case they don't have that previous.
Okay. What would a typical day be like for a franchisee, Bennett? You know, you mentioned that, you know, being involved in the community is very important. Maybe you could talk, you know, about some of, you know, what that's like, as far as like a typical day, if there is such a thing.
Yeah. And this maybe is a little bit more of my preference and my management and belief style, but owning a franchise, if you're putting cookies in the oven and decorating them, you should be paying somebody $12 an hour to do that and do more of a high impact.
Right.
So that is, and this is something that I do on a weekly basis, interview franchisees, what's going well, what's not, sure with me, the do's and the don'ts. And then you get really good, ideas, and we could then spread those ideas across. So like, one of our franchisees in Indiana, he will do as much as catering in a week as a lot of companies do overall revenue. And he's just, and he says, I know my talents, and my talents are sales. And then I have a really good operation manager, and I tell her, you take care of the customers when they come through the door, and I'll get them through the door. And so he's just hitting the ground, you know, with delivering cookies cut up to different businesses with flyers and saying, hey, keep us in mind. And another one in North Dakota is really good at the fundraising. She went and contacted some elementary schools and, hey, we want to be your fundraising efforts and have a large increase in revenue. Another franchisee in Colorado told me that because they're asking, and this is another, you know, key to data collection, which is often hard, but when the customer comes in, how'd you hear about us, especially if you're a new store?
Right.
And a lot of people were telling him, oh, we saw your truck on the freeway, because he wrapped his truck in, you know, dirty dough teal. Those are just a few kind of ideas off the top of my head that Those are not things that every franchisee does, and those are things that franchisees kind of figured out by themselves, and now we're disseminating that information.
Right. It's best practices, isn't it, Bennett? You know, is it sharing of best practices? You know, I mean, all those ideas that you just mentioned, I mean, they're so clever, and it would probably work for all the franchisees, wouldn't it? You know, I mean, doing B2B corporate events, you know, education. I mean, it is. It's really clever. I have to ask you, because, again, studying your background, I mean, you seemed like you knew you were going to go into entrepreneurship at a very young age. So, I mean, I have to ask you, I mean, what advice would you give to our listeners in their quest to buy a franchise? Because you know that being involved in franchising now, I recently heard there's like 4,000 different systems in the United States, which seems a little bit overwhelming for our listeners in the early stages. It's like, oh my God, where do I begin? From everything you've learned, Bennett, up to this point, what advice would you give to our listeners then in their quest to buy a franchise?
I might be a little biased, but my mind, because of my skill set, I want simplicity. I want something that's very simple.
Yes.
So
right.
I think food is typically on the complicated side. I think we've simplified it, but I think home services is a really good even step before that, because it's even lower cost and you could kind of try your hand out on it. And then I think that potential franchisees, once they've narrowed it down to a few brands or even picked a brand, they're not doing the legwork to call existing franchisees. Because you can look at the FDD and but man, just like look at Crumbl's FDD over the last 2 years. It was a huge difference. So if you buy it based on their FDD compared to what their numbers are right now from calling a franchise, that's going to be a much different story. So I think that really calling every freaking person on that franchise list and getting the feedback live from the people operating the system is often overlooked.
Yeah, I like that response, Ben. You know, I think because that's what franchising is, you know, if the model is simple, you know, which yours is, you know, I think there's always an advantage there. There are some models out there, you know, that I've interviewed in the past that they seem, they're a franchise, but the models seem a little bit complicated sometimes, you know, so that's really what impressed me, you know, about your model, Dirty Dough. So I can ask you the last question, because you founded the organization. I mean, so where do you see Dirty Dough? If you can look into a crystal ball, whether it was 1 year or 3 years or 5 years, where do you see the organization?
In a five-year plan, I'd love to hit 1,000 stores. Why? It's a good round number, right? But if we get out 1,000 stores, we have a nonprofit, and the goal is to open up a mental health wellness center in the local community, and you're converting a small classroom into one of these education centers that kids could pop in 10, 15 minutes. That would be awesome. If we could have 1,000 stores with really impacting the mental health of the local community by also having 1,000 wellness centers, that would be absolutely amazing.
How did you hone in on the mental health awareness, Bennett? I mean, did you have any personal experiences with that? You know, because there's always a lot of choices for companies. You know, I'm always curious, you know, in thinking of like, you know, corporate social responsibility and giving back. I mean, how did you hone in on the mental health, which I think is a great choice, by the way, but how did you pick that one?
Yeah, it kind of goes back when I had an exit from my solar company. I was 28 years old, and I was in poor shape. I was 310 pounds.
Oh wow!
Didn't have a great relationship with my wife or kids. Not like we fought or anything, but it wasn't.
Right.
I was just working all the damn time.
Right.
When I sold the solar company and I hit that $1 million goal that I wanted, I felt great for however long, and then your body goes back to homeostasis, and you're just like, oh. And I immediately set the next goal. So it was kind of me catching myself in that pattern, like, wait, what am I actually after? Am I actually after money or the emotions that I feel that money could bring me? And then now I just need to narrow down on the emotions. So that's when I defined my mission statement. And I said, I want joy and I want fulfillment and I want it as often as I can. I don't want to wait till I'm dead to, you know.
Right.
So that's why I threw in the despite life's dirtiness. And from that, it's okay, now how do you achieve that? And you look at, I've traveled to several dozen countries, and you look at, you just look at suicide rates. Like I was in Kenya last year, and their suicide rates are a third of it in the United States. So it's like, is money making people more happy? I don't think so. I think it's more mindset or mental health. So that's kind of
right
through that. And I'm like, if you want more happiness, more joy, more fulfillment, you have to work on your mental health and your mindset. And I think that's really the key to fulfillment.
I think it's well said, and it's, and I'm glad I asked you the question, you know, because it's very powerful. I even saw a work because I try to do so much research before I interview someone like yourself, and I even saw a workout video from you, and I got a tip from you because I don't know a lot about, you know, working out and things like that, but you were like lifting weights, and then you said something like, you know this better than I do, that you don't have to do that every day. It's almost like you work a muscle, and then you can go do something else, work another muscle the following day. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
I thought that was it was very it made a very big impression.
Yeah, so what I told you I was at 310 pounds. I'm at like 205 right now. So I've lost over 100 pounds, and I've been sharing that journey.
That's great.
A lot of people do like, well, how do you do that? Are you just in the gym all the time? And it's, no, I go to the gym 3 times a week for 30 to 45 minutes.
Right.
Each major muscle group, one time per week, just work it out hard and give it a whole week to rest. Because your muscles don't grow in the gym. What you're doing is you're tearing your muscles. They need
That's
to repair afterwards.
Yes.
You need to give them that time to repair, which is often overlooked.
That's fantastic. What's the best way, Bennett, for our listeners to get more information on Dirty Dough? Of course, as the product, but even, of course, the franchise opportunity itself. Are there any websites you can kind of like direct them to?
Yeah, DirtyDough.com is the best on the Dirty Dough side. Other social media, I have a website as well, Bennett Maxwell, just my first and last name.com. That with links to Dirty Dough as well as my own social media, because I do share a lot about entrepreneurship, mental health, and all of that jazz.
Okay.
I try to do it a few times a day. So those are the two best ways to connect.
Well, I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed interviewing you today, Bennett. I would love to invite you back, you know, over the next year or two as you continue to grow, because I won't be surprised at all when you hit that 1,000 mark. You know, I think this is an amazing franchise opportunity. I've done hundreds of these interviews, so it was a privilege and an honor for me to finally get to speak to you today.
Thank you. I appreciate the time.
This has been my pleasure, Bennett, and we'll be right back with more franchise interviews.